morning.
Good morning.
Got enough coffee to get through?
Second cup. Good to go.
Oh, excellent. No, I'm on my first. It's almost gone. I should have refilled it before we started. Oh, well. Mm-hmm. That's what you get.
You do.
So last week, it came up in conversation that cover cropping was going to be a whole topic in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
And so we'll do that today.
Okay. We'll try.
Why don't we start with housekeeping?
Housekeeping at the beginning.
Sure. Housekeeping. Yeah. Thank you to our patrons, John Hargreaves and Tracy Terrell, new patrons. We seem to be getting more and more every week. I guess we're doing something, right?
Awesome.
What else? You know, we are remiss in calling out our buddy Mark at Mountain View Hops. It's been a few weeks since we've talked about him. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
And Mark sent us Christmas presents, which was very nice of him. We got to see in person some of his candles and soaps. I say see, but really smell.
Smell, yes.
They smell good.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes, thank you, Mark. Good, good stuff. And the wrapping paper, I think he said he found it on Etsy, which is a hop pattern design. I need that.
Awesome.
Very cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to talk about the workshop and the pivoting?
Yep, we do. Yeah.
All right, so the other big thing, we've been talking and talking about our workshop at the end of February. And, I mean, one of the big things, there's one phrase you use all the time, James, and it's that no plan survives implementation.
That's correct.
And so this plan did not survive implementation.
Mm-mm.
The workshop on the 22nd of February will no longer be held on the 22nd of February. It will actually no longer be held.
It will not be held ever. Mm-hmm. Well, in that format.
Correct. So we just did not get the response to that we were hoping for. And that is fine. It taught us a valuable lesson about what's wanted out there, and more importantly, what's not wanted out there.
Well, and I think it's important to note that, you know, we're following a model that worked for us in the past. Mm-hmm. And that was a model of we're going to hold live workshops. And we used to do this all the time and to great success. But at this point in, the industry's maturity, it's just not as interesting anymore to have that format. Some folks, I know there's conflicts, there's always conflicts, but, in the past, we always had better success. But I think right now the industry is telling us they need to move in a different direction. And so it's time for us to pivot.
Pivot we shall. So anyone who's registered, thank you. We will be... By the time you hear this, your money will have been refunded and you'll have seen this in print. And we are looking into some other options. Some of that's going to lean heavily on the patron community. And by the way, when we initially didn't get the registrations we wanted, we reached out to our patrons specifically. And thank you, gang, for all the feedback and all the recommendations. That helps us so much get a pulse on what people are really looking for. And the support. Several of you said... You're not going to stop doing what you're doing, are you? Because we love the content. It's just that this vehicle to deliver was not the right way to do it. And we really appreciate all the honest feedback.
Excellent.
Pivoting and moving forward.
Yep, we heard you.
All right, I think that's the end of housekeeping.
Okay. Very good. So you want to talk about cover crops?
We do. We want to talk about cover crops.
Cover crops, companion plants, biodiversity, all that good kind of stuff.
So as a reminder from last time, we were talking about, dealing with weeds and the fact that cover cropping, it just came up as a side note, can be helpful because you're really smothering those shallow root weeds, whereas it won't harm the deeper root hop plants. And then we said, well, what about more cover cropping? Oh, too big a topic. Let's push it off.
So, yeah, so we were talking about shallow rooted weeds and deeper rooted hops, and the fact that all of the anything else you have growing in your hop yard is going to compete with the hops for nutrients and water and you name it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as anyone who's grown hops and any degree of success knows, that when the hops get really out of control along the ground level, within the row, they just form this mat of runners and shoots, and wow, they choke out the weeds pretty darn well. Well, why don't we use a cover crop? Why don't we put something else growing in there that can choke the weeds out everywhere, right?
Yep.
And that was originally my thought when I started growing hops, which seems like a lifetime ago, as a techie, sciencey horticulturist guy. I said, wow, look at the way they do this in the Pacific Northwest, or certainly in Europe with the heavy tilling and whatnot. That's really awful. Why don't they cover crop? And in some more semi-arid locations, that may be fine. But foolish me, I didn't understand downy mildew at the time. So all of our hop yards, when we first started, I seeded down to Dutch white clover, which is an annual clover that usually is in like residential lawn seed mixes. Because I said, hey, it fixes nitrogen, it'll grow really densely, it flowers, it's, you know, so pollinators will love it. This is great. This is good stuff. So the first thing we did is we seeded it everywhere. We seeded it over the entire hop yard, in the row, in the inter-row, everywhere. And we said, oh, no problem. The hops will come up through it because it only grows about 4 inches tall. So no problem, right?
Problem.
Kept the weeds down great, but problem. Problem is, for us in Wisconsin, is downy mildew. And what ended up happening was that that clover kept the soil surface damp and cool at the perfect sporulation temperature for downy mildew.
I think that was the first word I didn't understand. Sporulation?
Sporulation, sporulation. Yep.
Okay. Real word?
Yep. Real word. Google the hell out of it. So we were inadvertently basically building an incubator for downy mildew in our hop yard. So that cover crop, the first thing we did, so oh, kill it off the mounds. So we went and we, after the season was over, we made sure to burn off all the, with chemically burn off all the clover off the mounds. So we said, oh, we're going to get the hop crowns high and dry, and this won't be a problem anymore. Wrong. Because the clover was still really dense in the inter-row. And even though we would mow it, yep, it's adding green manure, you know, nitrogen back into the soil, because clover fixes nitrogen from the air and doesn't really rob it from the soil. That's why we used it. It wasn't really competing with the hops that way. We figured, hey, no problem. But because we had such good downy mildew weather in Wisconsin, that clover in the inter-row still acted like an incubator for downy mildew. And no matter what we did, any way, shape, or form, we could not keep our, certainly our late season downy, so the stuff that crops up and you see it on the cones and causing all sorts of havoc just before harvest, we couldn't keep it under control. The clover was keeping the relative humidity artificially high in the hop yard, right next to the soil. So we had to, because of our downy pressure was so high, we had to go to a moonscape. We had to till everything. We couldn't have anything growing in our hop yard but hops in order to reduce the downy pressure. And that was a hard lesson learned over numerous years. And I start out this way, right? You're like, holy crap. I thought this was going to be all about cover cropping. So James just said this is bad, so we're done.
10 minutes.
10 minutes. Yep. Super, super easy today. Enjoy your drive to work. It didn't work for us because of our specific conditions. And then people would say, well, maybe you had the wrong cover crop. And I would say, maybe they are right. So let's talk about the important factors when considering to cover crop or not. What are the benefits? What are the drawbacks? And how you might go about doing this. Any questions so far?
The one I would have is this. We spent the whole last episode talking about pre-emergence and using those to control for weeds. We've also talked about the fact that you will so benefit from dealing with the weeds in advance than having to just pull weeds when they're there, because it's torturous.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my question or my statement is, so the pre-emergence, while they're very important, not enough, and that's why we also looked at cover cropping, or was it more a matter of finding the right balance?
I think it's finding the right balance, because if we look at human beings, for whatever reason, we are creatures of absolutes, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like moonscaped or fully planted, cover cropped. I'm like, you know what? I always like to say it's not that simple. So there's a whole spectrum of options in between those two. And everybody's microclimate and their own growing scenario may require different approaches. So it's not all or nothing, right? The idea of keeping your mounds bare, because we know, I mean, we could list off the number of diseases and insect problems you could have by keeping other plant material close to your hops, right? This would be a reason why you wouldn't want to plant right up to your hop crowns. Black crown rot, red crown rot, red crown gall, downy mildew, hop vine borer, corn borer, fusarium, all sorts of diseases and insect pest issues that would potentially be exacerbated if you have a lot of dense cover right up next to your hop crown. So that would speak to putting down a pre-emergent so you don't have anything else growing on the mound, right?
Sure.
But what about the inter-row? You know, so let's say you're on 12-foot centers between your rows. So call it 4 meters for giggles. And that's an awful lot of open soil space. So what are you going to do there? Well, what's wrong with keeping it opened? Well, you can keep it open if you want to. How are you going to keep it opened? Because again, if you've got anything else growing in your hop yard, it's going to compete with your hops. So you have two choices. Nothing in there.
And that requires work, having nothing.
That requires work, and work means money and time. And it's also potentially not very good for your soil, right? We talked about continuous tilling and how that's no good. Or you put something in there that you can determine to be beneficial. So things like I said earlier, clover or alfalfa that actually fix nitrogen from the air. It's not going to rob as much nitrogen from the hops. And actually at the end of the season, if you wanted to, you could till that in. And that's what we call green manure, right? So you're actually adding nutrients to the soil. And that nitrogen that's in that plant is going to break down over time and give you a really nice slow-release nitrogen. So that's a good option for organic growers. And it's a good option for most growers, actually.
And I would just make the point there, because we've talked about green manure before, and a common question that comes back with, what do I do with the vines I've decapitated? They don't make mm-hmm. great green manure, if I recall correctly.
They do not. They're all woody. Mm-hmm. So the leaves and things like that are on there, adding that back as compost or mulch, you got to be really careful, because usually there's, you know, you're growing a monoculture, so there's insect disease, you know, viral potential issues there. That stuff needs to be hauled away, composted, and then put back on the yard if you're at all concerned. So that could be used as a soil amendment, but it wouldn't necessarily be a green manure, as opposed to like barley or some other living cover crop that you just go in and actually, while it's still alive, till it in. That would be a green manure. So those are your two options for your inter-row, to have it bare or to control what plants are going to grow there. I would prefer to have the control. So then people say, well, what plants should I grow? And how tall should they be? And how should I manage them? And blah, blah, blah. So think of this as a cover cropping as a management tool. If you have a bare parking lot, asphalt, right? The biodiversity, so the number of things living there, is going to be pretty small compared to, oh, say, a meadow, right?
Sure.
So, well, why is that? Well, it's because in a meadow, you have a wide, wide selection of habitat, so living quarters, different temperatures and moisture conditions, different food sources, all sorts of things that would attract just a multitude of living organisms.
You're creating home for interactivity, which Asphalt does not give you.
That's correct. So along with interactivity is predation, right? So you have insects and critters and other things feeding on other insects and critters and other things. And you have scenarios where diseases can't get a hold because there is no monoculture. There's other, what we call, they cannot occupy that niche. So like, let's say downy mildew, for example, gets a hold of your hops so well because you have a monoculture and it occupies a niche that is not being occupied by anything else. So if you could find that niche that downy likes to inhabit and occupy it with something else, so basically, sorry, no vacancy, then your disease pressure could potentially drop, which is sort of a strange idea, but that's one of the ways having a biodiverse farm can actually benefit you, is by taking away those niches for those disease pressures. Those really are your two spectrums between moonscaping, right? Clean tilling or burning down or whatever you're going to do, and having a planted hop yard. So you're like, wow, why would I not do this? Well, I think you're trying to do this commercially. So remember, anything that you're going to put in the interrow is going to cost you money and time to deal with. So you're going to have to plant it. You're going to have to maintain it. Yes, it takes maintenance. And then how are you going to maintain your operation getting down through there? So you don't want anything tall. Really, you don't want anything perennial unless it's very, very short.
So why not perennial?
Well, so there are some perennial aspects that you could put in there. I mean, you're not going to, I suppose you could seed your entire interrows to cone flowers, but you have to consider perennials have much deeper tap roots in general. And so they're going to be able to scavenge more nutrients than some of the more shallow rooted annuals that are going to be in the interrow. So if you're going through and you're fertilizing your hop rows and you're just doing it on the mound and you've got shallow rooted annual plants in the interrow, that fertilizer's moving down through the soil column and less so horizontally. But if you have deeper rooted perennials, they can, or more certainly more aggressive rooted perennials, they can sort of grow into the fertilized and irrigated zones and outcompete hops for some of those nutrients. In some cases, you know, perennial grasses have shown to be very effective in like semi-arid regions. But, and I can get into that data from some research studies, but in general, we look towards annuals because usually at the end of the year, we want to till all that stuff in to add those nutrients back to the soil that it took out of the soil, as well as break any sort of cycles. It could be weed cycles, it could be disease cycles, it could be disadvantageous insects or something. So it's not something that we're planting and manicuring like a garden for years and years and years. It's sort of an annual cyclical thing.
Gotcha.
Right? Okay, so let's think about this now. The idea of cover cropping is to keep the weeds down with something that's less noxious. Okay?
Right.
So what are our options? Well, James, you said perennials. No perennials. So I said, you got to be careful with perennials, but let's consider annuals. So the first thing that most people go to are annual grasses because they grow fast, they grow dense, and you can mow them. They don't grow very tall. So people look at things like, well, what's an annual grass? Wheat, rye, oats, those are all annual grasses. You're like, wait a second, those are like farm crops. Yep, but they're also cover crops and they're cheap as opposed to like grass seed for a lawn. So you can go down to the store, to the farm depot and co-op or whatever and get a 50-pound bag of rye, annual rye, and seed it down without much of a problem. And boom, you're going to get rye. And you can even mow it, but it's going to die at the end of the year. So you could till it in and you know it's not going to resprout. And if it goes to seed, those seeds usually aren't viable. But even if they are, it's not like it's going to infest your entire hop yard.
It's also a good way the first time you're doing it, because you know it's a one and done.
Yep.
If you don't like how it works out, it's not there next year.
Yeah, I've used oats and rye in the past, and they worked out fine. Specifically when I was doing like new plantings, like a new hop yard where the soil's just recently turned over and you know you've got a seed bank in there that's just going to explode, we would not even till it. We would go in with a seed drill and actually, you know, drill the seeds right into the ground, so disturbing as little soil as possible, and getting those that rye to pop up and smother out the other weeds. Worked out really, really well.
Nice.
So that annual grasses are people's first go-to. That's great for weed coverage, but it doesn't really do a whole whopping lot for biodiversity because you got a monoculture, right? It's all rye or oats. And, you know, so it's like, well, I don't know what it's going to do for my biodiversity, but it will provide habitat for predator insects, which will help with, you know, controlling some insect pest problems, certainly spider mites.
Just to clarify that, it's providing a home for insects that will fight the spider mites. You're not increasing your risk of spider mites. Okay, just want to make sure that was clear.
Yep, correct. And they found that, like, with some of these perennial grasses, perennial fescues, in semi-arid regions like the Yakima Valley in Washington, that their instances of mite explosions, so to speak, were greatly diminished by planting in the interrow with these fescues, just because they provided habitat for predators.
And once again, my challenge is to find a picture for Instagram of a mite explosion.
You are challenged. Mm-hmm. You're good at that. You can do a good job of that.
I'll find. Hey, I found cash on the field, didn't I?
You did find cash on it. That was impressive.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got a lot of Facebook props on that one. Mm-hmm. So, mite explosions, yes. So that doesn't mean that, you know, you can't have increase the biodiversity around the rest of the farm, which is what we focused on. And so any place that was on the farm that wasn't being farmed or could be planted to natives was. And we would have large, we call them biobuffers. Sometimes they call them bioswales, which are just big swaths of native plants. That's where your biodiversity comes from. Those, whatever plants thrive best in your environment. Like last time we talked about, my neighbor calls them weeds. But my wife and I have been restoring about an acre's worth of prairie for 20 years. It's gorgeous now. It was a absolute nightmare for about 10 years. But once you get it established with, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of endemic species, all of your predators and your biodiversity will come. You don't have to go out and buy predators, right? A lot of folks use biopredators for pest control. Folks, if you don't have any place for them to live or reproduce, they're going to go away. So the first thing before you buy any predators for your hop yard is to make sure they've got the right home. We found, being with our bioswales and then literally being right across the road from a wetland, huge tract of wetland, that we didn't have insect problems. I don't remember how many years, 15 years?
Yeah.
I never once sprayed for insects.
Jeez.
Never once. Now, for mildew, it was a daily routine, almost, but never. We never had to. That also comes down to, you know, deciding what pressure is economically, you know, impactful for you. Did come close once with Japanese beetles, but it was just, I wasn't going to wreck the biodiversity in my hop yard just to take care of those things.
Sure.
So it can work, but you've got to, if you're going to go that approach with cover cropping and companion planting, as I think you called it earlier, you have to be all in. It has to be part of your process, not just something you do on the side and see how it happens, because it's not going to work. So it can work. Again, everybody's location is different, but it is certainly doable. Where we would put these things, these non-cover crop plants, they're the biodiversification project, is we would put them around the perimeter of the hop yard, fence rows, next to the barns, not too close. We usually had a walkway around there just because of rodent issues, rodent break. We would keep around the greenhouse clear because we didn't want anything clogging up the air intakes or extra insect pressures around there, but all through the drainage swales and along the road and any place that wasn't a critical drive path that we weren't going to get upset about if we had to drive through it with a tractor, and that maybe occasionally got mowed. It also helped to keep down the weed pressures from our invasive species like wild parsnip, which is awful.
I don't remember the parsnip. That's interesting.
Oh, wild parsnip. Oh, yeah, that's the stuff. If you break, you get the sap on your skin, it and the light hits it, it turns into blisters.
Ooh.
It's like Mother Nature's napalm. It's awful. And the only way to control that is continuous mowing. So we would do that right when it was flowering, and then hopefully the other plants could grow in and smother it. But, yeah, it's a pain in the butt, literally.
We've just lost our two wild parsnip growers out there.
Yeah, sorry, guys. It's if you're in Wisconsin, you're going to prison. get out of the state. What else can we talk about cover cropping?
I don't know. I mean, that's a lot of options. Again, it's important to talk about the fact that that it's not an all-in-one solution, as you said earlier on. I mean, there's still, go back and listen to our discussion from last week on pre-emergence if you haven't, because they really do need to work together. How will pre-emergence destroy your cover crop? How about that?
Well, if you put a pre-emergent down and then try to seed into it, it's not going to work out so well. It's going to keep them from coming up. So that's the thing with pre-emergence. You don't put the pre-emergence where you want your cover crop. I know what we can talk about. Let's talk about this idea of companion cropping. So you're like, hey, I've got this, you know, acre of hops, and most of it is, I'm not using it. It's just rows to drive down. I'm going to plant something else in there.
Or something viable to actually sell.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. So there's a guy down the road from our first hop yard. He stopped in one day, and he's like, yep. Now, granted, this is when we were really tiny. This, you know, we were like an acre and a half. And he's like, yeah, I'm right down the road here. We're putting in poles. We saw him putting in poles. This was 12 or 14 years ago. Putting in poles. We're going to have 100 acres. Oh, really?
Wow.
Okay. 100 acres. Yep. Yep. And the first 10 acres are going to be you-pick hops. So I'm like, oh, so like you pick strawberries? He's like, yep, they're going to be you-pick hops. We're not going to harvest them. We're going to make people come out and pick them. Brewers can come out and pick them.
Bring your own ladder?
He's like, and then we're going to plant raspberries in between the rows. Ah.
Hmm.
So how are they going to get in there to pick the hops? Well, we're just going to put one row of raspberries right down the middle. They can get in there and pick the hops. Well, yeah. Well, how are they going to get to the hops? Because, you know, the hops are up high, so you have to bring in ladders or whatever. It's like, oh, that's their problem. Great business plan.
Interesting.
Now, those poles are still there. He did put raspberries in there, but those raspberries have been dead for 10 years. Now it's just a skeleton sticking in the air back there. So, I think the house is vacant now, too.
Did he ever actually go to market with the pick your own?
Oh, no.
It never actually got that far.
Yeah. Nope. And he put in maybe a half an acre of trellis.
I can't imagine let's put the science aside. I know that made you die a little inside when I said that. But mm-hmm. if we put the science aside, even if that was viable, always thinking market like I am, who is the market for come pick your own hops? I mean, coming to pick your own apples and strawberries, you bring the kids. But other than the local homebrew crew, who is coming to pick their own hops?
I can't tell you the number of times people have come to our workshops and that was their big hook.
Really? Wow.
We're going to do pick your own hops. I said, really? Did you just listen to what I said? I said, you know, you got about 5 days to get any given variety off, right? He's like, yeah, but you know, they come out and get them and they'll pick them and whatever. I'm like, so then whatever's left over is just going to go to hell. He's like, well, yeah. I said, do you have any idea how long it takes to hand pick hops? Yeah, it's just people have these ideas and they do not want you to shit on their parade and they won't listen to it. But this idea of planting in between the hop rows with another viable crop, I mean, it's tempting because you're like, I want to make the most use of that space. But then you realize how many times you have to go down through those hop yards and spray to control anything, conventional or organic, doesn't matter. So what are you going to do? What are you going to grow that's really low that you can constantly drive over? Well, I'll grow strawberries. Okay, you can do that. But now you're growing strawberries in an area that is going to be relatively well shaded. And strawberries don't take well to that. So try again. I'm going to grow. So you keep doing this and you start to realize that, you know what? No. There's a reason why they don't intercrop with anything else in hop production. Not only does it create a giant pain in the ass from a maintenance standpoint and an operation standpoint, but all those nutrients you're putting on your hop crop are for the hops. They're not to feed other things. So any other crop load you put in that system is going to require inputs, light, water, food. And you're already pretty maxed out on the carrying capacity of that land with what the hops are going to require. How many orchards and vineyards grow other stuff in between their rows for harvest? Nobody. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah, you want to maximize your available resources, and land is an available resource. It mm-hmm. it is painful to look down those wide rows and you build them wide enough for a tractor and you think, yep, man, I could do something.
But, yep. But don't be tempted to do that. You know, if you want to put alpine strawberries in there and let the birds have them, if that's what you want to do. But, you know, you're going to be those inter-rows, the drive rows, those are maintenance access points. And they can have a strip of other cover down the middle, right, to keep the weeds down and to provide some biodiversity in there. But, you know, that's not vacant land, so to speak. That land is being used by the hops, because by year three or four, the entire plantation floor of your hop yard is nothing but hop roots. It's not, your hops aren't just growing in the, you know, meter wide row that you've plowed.
Yeah, they've spread underneath everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't thought about the light issue, but sure, if you have a good robust crop, you've got shade in between those rows.
You do. And we try to do what we can for air movement, right, to reduce the disease pressure. But it can get pretty damp in there. And certainly when you're down on the ground level like that, and a lot of those crops that you would think that you would want to grow, what are you going to grow, tomatoes in there? You know, grow zucchini in there? Those are like full sunlight plants, and they get powdery mildew at the drop of a hat. So granted, it's not the same powdery mildew that hops get, but still, you're putting them in an environment, even if they would grow, that could be ripe for powdery mildew. Now you're going to go spray for powdery mildew on your zucchini?
Yeah.
Probably not. Don't do it.
Interesting.
If you want to have biodiversity in your hop yard, do it around the edges. We hung birdhouses. We had bat habitat. We had, you name it. That's great. Do as much as you can there. But where your hops are growing are for hops. And any other plants that you're going to have in there should be considered weed abatement and treated as such.
I'm a huge fan of bats.
Yeah, bats are awesome.
We lived our pest house. We lived on a bog, and all of our neighbors had bugs nonstop, and we had none because we had a bat house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we lived, as you know, the farm was right out there across from a wetland, so you just imagine the mosquitoes could get pretty heavy out there, and we would be in the barn at night, let's say after a harvest, and sitting there having beer, and we'd have both ends of the barn open, and we'd have the lights on, and we had a tension fabric barn, a white one, which people will read all about in our upcoming text, but we'd leave the ends open, and the bats would just fly through, because all the bugs were coming to the white canopy that had light bouncing off of it. And would just be zoom, 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 just constantly bats flying through. We're just sitting there talking, and sometimes we'd have brewers out, or neighbors would come over, and they'd be all freaked out at just just constant bat traffic. And they're like, oh, they're going to hit me. I'm like, they are not going to hit you. What are you, nuts? They're not like drunken idiots flying around bumping into stuff all the time, are they? If they can hone in on a tiny mosquito with echolocation, they ain't going to hit you.
Right. Oh, that's great. So I'd say one other thing on that's related to cover cropping and more so to weed stuff. We always get one or two people saying, oh, I just let the sheep out into the yard and they eat all my weeds.
Oh, right. Go for it. I know several people who do this. See, it's another tool, right? You can do that. Sheep won't eat all weeds. I tell you that right now. Goats will eat everything, including your hops. Cows will eat everything, including your hops. Well, they won't eat everything. They won't eat thistle. But sheep are an option for grazing your interrow, but they're not going to keep all your weeds down. It's just not going to happen. They will also eat the hop leaves, but as my friends in New Zealand showed me, you know, they'll only eat the hop leaves if you train them to do so. If you just figure, oh yeah, I'll let some sheep in there every now and again, or they're not so particular to them. But if you train them to eat the hop leaves, then they will. So they could keep your shoots down, keep the crowns kind of bare. But I don't personally have any experience with cropping with sheep. I know some of our listeners do, and we'd love to hear some feedback. Take some pictures and put it on our Instagram of your sheep and your hop yard. That would be awesome.
Oh, sure. Animal pictures are always a plus.
Yep.
Is there anything, if you do allow wild livestock into your field, is there anything you have to watch out for from a pre-emergent or an herbicide perspective that's not safe for them?
Yes. And you also have to watch out for a food safety thing. So if you're selling wet hops, that, you know, you have to keep the animals out of the field for X amount of time because of potential manure contamination of the raw hop cones. So there are regs around that. And, you know, I'm happy to talk to some other folks who are more knowledgeable about this than me. So if anybody's out there who's managing their hop yard with animals, please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you and pick your brain.
Or was it more a matter of finding the right balance?